With me now on Fresh Air is Julia Robinson, who was appointed by Mayor Good as Philadelphia Director of Housing. Julia Robinson began her career in housing as an activist in the Fair Housing Movement in the early 60s. She worked on housing issues with the American Friends Service Committee and the Philadelphia Housing Association, and she was appointed Executive Director of the Fair Housing Council of the Delaware Valley in 1967. She went on to work with the Housing Association of the Delaware Valley, the South Central Project Area Community Corporation, and the Urban Reinvestment Task Force, Philadelphia Neighborhood Housing Services, Ventures in Community Improvement, the Office of Housing and Community Development, and the Philadelphia Housing Development Corporation. She has a master's degree in city planning from the University of Pennsylvania and has taught city planning at Penn and urban studies at Temple University. Julia Robinson is also the director of the Mayor's Task Force on the Homeless, and she'll be back with us later this month to discuss the homeless. She'll be back on June 26th when we devote the entire edition of Fresh Air to the problem of the homeless in Philadelphia. So that program, again, coming up June 26th. Julia Robinson, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you for inviting me to come here to talk about our new housing efforts, programs, and policies.
Before we get to those policies, I'd be interested in hearing how you first became a housing activist in the 60s.
In the early 60s, my husband and I were living in North Philadelphia with a young family, decided that we would like to move to a suburban community, and found out that the road was primarily blocked for us at that time, not because we didn't have the funds, not because we didn't have a desire, any education, no background and all of those things, but because we were black. We felt that this was not something that we wanted to tolerate and joined other like-minded black and white individuals in the fair housing movement to open up some of the suburbs on a non-discriminatory basis.
Do you think that the issues in the housing movement have changed over the years?
The issues certainly have changed in the housing movement. I think for the most part, in terms of suburban living, any individual, and I say for the most part because it's not certainly across the board, but I think that the issues that we were dealing with in the early 60s are just about resolved, so that if a family today has the income, the interest, the money, and so forth, and a desire to make this kind of move, that they can either do it, or there's certainly a lot of support systems there that were not there in the 60s to assist. I think the issues today are much more of income. So while in the 60s, we certainly only had a small number of people who had the kind of income to move to a suburban area, I think today we have an issue of income for lots of families that mean actual survival. We have a homeless population now that's much, much larger than we ever had in the 60s. We have many more people living in substandard housing now than we did in the 60s. We have many more people living in overcrowded conditions now than we did in the 60s. So I think the issues really have shifted. Certainly in terms of my interest and my work and involvement, it has evolved over a period of over 20 years, so that I now believe that the most critical issues are those of income and what that does to families in pursuit of decent and affordable housing.
My guest is Julia Robinson, who's the Director of Housing for the City of Philadelphia. And time permitting, we will open up the telephones for your questions a little later on in the program. Let's talk about some of the policies of the current administration. Philadelphia is frequently called a city of neighborhoods, and I know a lot of the people in the neighborhoods feel that neighborhood interests have been passed over in the past few years for center city interests. What do you think are the priorities now for housing issues in the neighborhoods?
I think that we have generally, in the last several years, had a strong neighborhood interest. I think that what happens is that, particularly from the point of view of the media, big projects such as the gallery and convention center get a lot more publicity than those issues in the neighborhoods. This administration has a very strong a commitment to the neighborhoods of this city, and we're working with neighborhoods all over the city. However, that will never get the kind of publicity that a large project such as the convention center will get. So from the point of view of the perception, I think it will be that there's a center city focus and bias, which really there is not.
Do you think that there are particular neighborhoods that are in need of more help?
I think there are neighborhoods all over the city that are both strong. I think there's a lot of strength that still exists in areas in North Central Philadelphia, in West Philadelphia, and in South Philadelphia. However, I think that there are pockets within those neighborhoods that need help. And we certainly will be focusing on trying to bring some positive kinds of results into those communities.
Yeah, what can you do? What have you isolated as being the main issues?
Well, the issues differ depending on the neighborhoods. You have some neighborhoods where there's a lot of vacant houses, and we are moving to try to develop some responses to that. You have some issues, some neighborhoods where you have a large portion of elderly residents who need assistance, both in terms of making repairs on their property and other kinds of issues because they've been there. And then you have other neighborhoods where you have just a deteriorating housing stock where there has been disinvestment on the part of the private sector and on the part of previous administrations, and how do you turn all those around? So the issues are really different depending on the neighborhoods.
I know one of the main issues of concern in a lot of Philadelphia neighborhoods is abandoned housing because it's a fire hazard. It's a threat to the children in the neighborhood who tend to play in or around those abandoned houses. If someone calls your office and says, there's an abandoned house on my block, we think it makes the block look bad and it's a safety threat as well. What does your office need to find out before it can even make a move? Do you have to see if it's owned by anybody?
Well, first of all, I want to let the audience know that the city does not own all vacant houses in the city, which is something that a lot of people feel. And all of those vacant houses are owned by someone. The city might own a particular house on a block, but for the most part, the city does not own them. They're generally privately owned, abandoned, tax delinquent, and sometimes have structural problems. What we are attempting to do now is to step up our acquisition and disposition of those vacant properties. There has to be a legal process that we go through if the property is privately owned, and in order to take it into the city's inventory and then to give it to, and we do give them, to willing and deserving families who agree to rehabilitate them. We generally will do this for the cost of $1 plus deed preparation, which is about $13 or $14. So we can do this entire transaction for less than $20 to an individual. There's two parts to the process. One is an acquisition piece. Since the city does not own all of those properties, we have to go through a process to acquire or buy or accept. We are stepping up that process in order to do that. Number one, we will accept properties on donation as long as they're structurally sound. If someone owns a property and it's tax delinquent, we will accept those properties on donation in exchange for forgiveness of municipal taxes.
On that building?
On that particular building. Now, the only exception to this is that we have owners of properties, multiple properties. So you will have a particular owner who owns 20 properties and all 20 of them are tax delinquent, and they will want to give us 10 of them because they think that there's no promise for those 10 in the private market and hold on to the other 10 that they think there is some promise for and yet not pay their taxes. We will accept all 20 of them, or we will accept 10 of them and forgive the taxes if they pay the taxes on the other 10. So that's really the only exception. So any owner who has a tax delinquent, structurally sound property that they would like to donate, they can donate it and we will wipe out the back taxes that are owed on those properties.
Well, what kind of power, if any, does the city have if there's an owner of an abandoned house who doesn't want to hand it over to the city and also doesn't plan on fixing it up.
Well, if the property is, if they pay their taxes, our powers are fairly limited at this point. However, if it's tax delinquent property, we can put the property through a sheriff sale system and have that property to come into the city. Or we can, as we are starting to do now, go through a condemnation process, which is also a legal process. So we have to go through a lengthy legal process in order to get those properties if the owner, A, will not fix them up, and B, will not pay the taxes. If they keep their taxes current and the property is not a public nuisance, meaning that it's not open and so forth, so if they keep it properly sealed and they pay their taxes, there's very little that we can do legally at this point.
When you do acquire an abandoned house, how do you decide whether you want to knock down the building or sell it?
Well, the primary thing that we're looking at now in terms of demolition versus rehabilitation, which is actually what you're talking about, is whether a building is structurally sound or not. If it is structurally sound and is susceptible to rehabilitation, and sometimes that means high cost, but we're interested in not taking into the inventory and passing them on to needy families, properties that have bulging walls, properties that have been extremely fire damaged, and so forth. So if the point of demarcation is whether they're structurally sound or not.
Is there a city homesteading policy, in other words, where a house is sold to someone for a minimal fee, like $1 or $10, with the understanding that they'll put a certain amount of labor and cash into the rehabilitation of the house?
Yes, there is. And the programs that we use now to implement that policy is called, our primary one is called Remove Urban Blight, or RUB. Just last week, we, through a lottery, selected almost 500 individuals to match up with 500 homes that we are going to be putting out in the system that you described. So it is a homesteading program, because those properties will be transferred by deed for $1 plus cost of deed preparation to individuals and families who are willing to rehabilitate them and live in them.
What does someone need to do to be eligible?
What someone needs to do to be eligible is to come into the central intake unit of the Office of Housing and Community Development at 1234 Market Street between the hours of 8:30 and 12:30 any day, Monday through Friday. You have to bring in certain documentation, proof of income and family size, but those are minimal kinds of considerations. And then your name is placed into a barrel with others, and we have a lottery. We will be having lotteries about once a month or once every 6 weeks. So when you get in, you will be automatically eligible for property.
I think Philadelphia has become nationally known for its homesteading activists, people who break into abandoned homes and live in it with the understanding that no one else is living there, that there's people who need housing, so they just claim the houses. Have you yet, during your tenure in this office, had any encounters with the homesteading activist groups? How strong do you think they are now?
Well, what happened is that for these groups that were encouraging and supporting families to do that, we had a truce, if you will, about a year or so ago, where we agreed to assist those families that were in those properties to do what we could to get them those properties by deed, by putting those properties through the sheriff's sale system and other kinds of mechanisms, in exchange for those groups agreeing that they would cease that activity. For the most part, the organized effort that was apparent 2, 3, 4 years ago has pretty much stopped. And what's happening is that those groups are encouraging their members and people who are interested to come into the regular system that we have set up.
My guest is Julia Robinson, and she's the Director of Housing for the City of Philadelphia under Mayor Good. Another issue that's of great concern to residents of many Philadelphia neighborhoods is gentrification, and by that I mean people moving in to low-rental neighborhoods, buying homes or even shells of homes, rehabilitating them, and consequently having taxes of homes raised around them because the value of the homes in that neighborhood goes up, and a lot of people living there are consequently forced out because they can't afford the taxes anymore. And, of course, people who had been renting there, likewise, frequently are forced out because they can't afford the rental. You've said in your housing policy that the administration will not develop programs or promote activities that will contribute to the displacement of people. What's an example of something that was perhaps done before that you would be opposed to because of the displacement that it would cause?
Well, rather than talk about what's been done before, I'd like to talk about some of the plans that we have and some of the things that we're doing, because I think they're very positive. Number one, we are now looking at developing through the Planning Commission indices and early warnings of when a neighborhood is undergoing disinvestment or reinvestment, as I would prefer, instead of gentrification, so that we know which areas are where investment is going on that would lead to the kind of displacement that you're talking about. So that's the first thing that we're doing. We will update that on an annual basis. And in order to do that, you look at things like real estate activity in the area. You look at the rise in real estate cost and some other indices. So we are setting up a warning system so that we know which areas really are prone to become displacement areas, and so that everybody who sees somebody in their area that's rehabbing a house doesn't automatically think that they're in a displacement area. The second thing we're doing, in particularly in an area like Spring Garden, where a lot of displacement has been going on, is we've been working very actively with community groups in that area, and we have requested, for instance, that an abandoned school be turned over to that community group for rehabilitation of housing units. I have personally made the request that the school board do this. We have made funds available for the rehab of that school building. We're working very closely with that community group. We have also, we're working with them to acquire some other abandoned properties in that community, and we'll make funds available to them or through them or to other developers who commit to holding on to some of those properties in that area for a moderate income family. So we're taking some positive steps. We do not want to retard investment, positive investment into communities, but we do want to promote communities that have people of all economic backgrounds in them. We think this is healthy, and so we want to encourage investment, but we also want to work with families who are there. The third thing that we're looking at right now is for those owners in the community is a policy whereby we could possibly place a lien at the owner's request on a property in lieu of increased real estate tax payments. We are unable, because of law and because of court decisions, to have differentials in tax assessment and therefore real estate taxes paid in a particular community. So if the values go up, the assessments by law and by court decisions also must go up. That is the one major item that hurts owners who live in the community, particularly elderly owners who've been there for years. It is our goal to support those owners to stay there. In terms of my examination of the issue, the only way that we can possibly do that is to allow those owners to request a lien in lieu of the real estate tax payment. And that lien will only become due and payable once that property is sold or transferred, so that these owners have the advantage of the rise in the real estate values in a particular community without during their lifetime or their tenure paying that differential in assessment. It has to be a policy whereby the city can recover at some point so that the city has an equity position for its owed real estate taxes, but it will not harm the current owners.
Does the possibility of the new convention center by the Reading Terminal affect your office? Are there people living in homes there who would be displaced by the building of the convention center?
There are a few residential pieces of real estate in the path of the convention center. We are in the process right now of looking at how we can satisfy the relocation needs of those residents in that area.
Have you looked at policies in other cities pertaining to gentrification or reinvestment, as you call it?
We have certainly looked at policies in other cities, and I think that what we are embarking upon right now for the city of Philadelphia is consistent with or better than the policy in almost any city in the country in terms of reinvestment areas.
My guest is Julia Robinson, who's the Director of Housing for the City of Philadelphia. Let's talk about public housing. I think that there are now 15,000 people, 15,000 families on the waiting list for public housing in Philadelphia. How would you describe the state of Philadelphia's existing public housing?
I would describe the state of Philadelphia's existing public housing as needing a great deal of improvement. I think we're suffering right now from what has been probably 15 or 20 years of lack of management for public housing and a great deal of neglect. We have started now to try to get a handle on the public housing issues. We have too many vacants in public housing. We have vacants in our conventional sites. We have vacants in our scattered sites. We have a utility payment problem in our scattered sites. We have tenants who don't pay rent. We have buildings that are in deplorable conditions. We have almost every kind of imaginable problem that you can think of. One of the first things that we did, this administration, when we took office, was to try to send a signal out to public housing residents that things are going to be different, that we are taking a very different kind of position in terms of their needs. What we did early on was, first of all, the mayor and the city comptroller named new members to the board of the housing authority, and among those members are two tenants, which is something that was felt very strongly needed to happen so that there's a voice for the tenants and their concerns on the board. So there are two out of five members are tenants. We retain the services of an interim general manager who is a businessman by a profession. We recruited some volunteer businessmen to help us in an interim basis. We have retained probably the best management consultant in public housing in the country to assist us in developing an overall plan for movement forward. We are in the midst of developing that plan now. It should be finished sometime this summer, and we plan to then take that plan, look at how we can implement it. We will not be able to do everything that everybody wants done at the same time, but we will have a plan that we will be following. It will be public, and people will know and be able to hold us accountable for implementing it.
If there are new public housing units that are built during your tenure as Director of Housing, would you have a recommendation for, say, garden apartments as opposed to high-rises or vice versa? What do you think are some of the lessons of the past in public housing?
I don't foresee us during the next several years being able to build any new public housing. I don't really think we need it. However, if we do build any, we will probably be building not only garden-type public housing, but in much smaller numbers per project. I just think to build, whether it's low rise or high rise, to put 400, 500, 600 units on a particular site is a mistake. So,
why is that?
Well, I think that you generally have too many people, except if you're dealing with elderly people, or we are certainly going to try to be more responsive to our disabled community in this city. But I think even for elderly and disabled, to build that large number of units together leads to isolation of whoever you have. I don't think elderly people want to be isolated from the rest of the population. I think they want to be secure, but I don't think they want to be isolated. I certainly know that disabled and handicapped individuals don't want to be isolated together away from the rest of the community. So I think it breeds isolation. I think it breeds differences. I think it exacerbates some of the differences that we're trying to get over in our community now. So I think that if we build smaller projects of 10, 20, 30 units, and even build those so that they're intergenerational to the extent that we can, it's just much better.
It's also very controversial whether or not the residents of a neighborhood should have any kind of say in whether or not public housing should be built there. And that's been an issue in Philadelphia as well as in New Jersey and other parts of the country. What do you think?
We work with community groups all over the city, and I really support their being. I support their organization. I support their input. I would stop short of supporting their veto. And I think that we've been shown through a variety of court decisions and laws that we cannot allow community groups an ultimate veto right over the building of anything in the community. We certainly hope that we will have, and I certainly think we will, an open dialogue with community residents and community organizations all over the city. However, as I said before, I don't foresee us building. We have lots of vacant units out there now, and even though they're in deplorable condition, for the most part, it's still much less expensive to rehabilitate than to build. So our issue over the next several years will be how can we use the resource that we already have and to our better advantage. We have a couple of thousand vacant units out there, and we need to put them back into shape and put them on the market.
Do you think that there's a shortage of decent low-income housing in Philadelphia?
Absolutely. There's a shortage of decent housing for low-income families. And this has come about primarily because of the national economy, where lots of people are out of work. So basically, it's an income problem. It's not a housing problem. We have lots of housing units in this city. And I think if people had the income to afford them, we would not have a shortage of housing in this city. And so it's basically, for me, an income problem. We've seen the governor and the state assembly has thrown people off of general assistance except for 3 months during the year, which has exacerbated our homeless problem because these individuals, cannot find jobs for the most part. The jobs are not there. And so it really is an economic problem, which is outside of the scope of the city government to deal with in its entirety. Most people who have sufficient income do not have housing problems. And so it's basically we have enough units out there, and if people had income, we would have developers coming out of the woodworks to rehabilitate those houses for rent or for sale. But the market isn't there because the income is not there.
But it still has quite an impact on housing, even if it's the problem of people losing income because of unemployment or welfare cutbacks, they still can't afford the housing that they would have previously been qualified for. So how does that affect your office? And is there any response
how it affects us is that we have many, many more people who need assistance, and we have the ability to assist in a proper way. What we have had to do is to cut down on the amount of assistance to individuals because our funds from the federal government to run these programs has decreased, just as the income for a lot of the individuals have decreased. And so what we've had to make a decision to attempt to serve more people than we were serving before with less funds. And the only way we could do that was by decreasing the amount of money that any individual or any family was entitled to. So where we used to put a great deal of money in the rehabilitation of vacant properties, we're now doing twice as many properties by decreasing the amount of money that we spend per property. And that's the way we've had to do it. Our funds have decreased also.
Very briefly, because we're running short of time, there has been a lot of complaints in Center City over the past few years from people who lived in apartment buildings that were converted to condominiums or co-ops. Is that on the decline now? Do you think that the conversion is still at the same peak that it was?
I think the conversion to condominium certainly is on the decline. However, one of the things that I'm interested in is how can we promote cooperative and condominium ownership for some low and moderate income families as an alternative to the general ownership kinds of patterns that we've had in the past. We have some beautiful real estate out there, large real estate that's abandoned, but it's worth saving. We need to save it because of its historic and architectural value. And for the most part, it's too large for single families because families cannot support those large structures with 6, 8, and 10 bedrooms anymore. So I am looking to develop a way that we can use some of those buildings for cooperative and condominium ownership for low and moderate income families.
You explained to us at the beginning of this interview that you got started in the housing movement when your family tried to move to the suburbs and found out that it was going to be really hard to do because people didn't want to sell to blacks. Now that you've been in a lot of different housing organizations over the past 20 years, now that you're an administrator, now that you're the director of housing in Philadelphia, do you see housing issues differently than you did when you were in the chair of the activist?
I think, yes, I do. A whole different perspective has been opened up to me because in the past my views were fairly narrow. They were narrowed to the point of dealing with the individual population or issue that I was involved in, the particular neighborhood that I was involved in. Now I see things very much from not only a city, but a more regional and national perspective, which is what I've got to do. We are part of, you know, we have a city, a very large city. We are part of a region. We're part of a state. We're part of a country. And the housing issues affect us from all over. So I do see it from a different perspective.
I want to thank you for joining us on Fresh Air today.